Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of July, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. Yes, Steve is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, somewhere in the Badlands, so we have no YouTube today. But, of course, we're still going, and, of course, if you're listening on YouTube, you don't know this. But for the rest of you, we're still, of course, live and
they'll figure
streaming.
It out soon, hopefully.
Right. Hopefully they will. But here's the news. Windows 7 customers should be on the lookout for a couple of challenges this month as the Win 10 1803 Trail of Tears continues. And the Win 10 1709 finally looks pretty solid. First, the good news. If you installed last month's Win 7 Server 2008 R2 patches and your network connections didn't go kablooey, you're almost undoubtedly okay to proceed with this month's patches. On the other hand, if you've been waiting to install patches on your Win 7 or Server 2008 R2 machine, you need to be aware of a bug that Microsoft has acknowledged. It was introduced by a patch back in March, according to the knowledge base articles, and hasn't been fixed yet. Symptom: there is an issue with Windows and third-party software that is related to a missing file. Because of this issue, after you apply this update, the network interface controller will stop working. If you're worried that installing this month's updates will clobber your network interface card, make sure you take a full backup before installing the updates. Older Win 7 machines don't get no respect. First, we had Microsoft's decision to end support for Pentium 3 processors, an undocumented change accompanied by doctored knowledge base articles that hide the promises that were made. Even though Microsoft repeatedly promised to support the processors, they're really old. They're vintage about 2002 at this point. I will let you do the math. You shouldn't be running Windows on old processors anyway. Now there's strong evidence that Windows Defender updates aren't getting out. The last such update was June 18th. So if you're using Windows Defender and you're using Windows 7, you are not protected by anything. As always, patching is important. But as always, take a full backup of all your data before you do. In this case, a full system backup might be in order. I know we don't usually recommend a full system backup, but this might be a good time to do that since updating can kill your network connection. And for those of you still running Windows 7, Microsoft is starting the process of abandoning you, so you're going to be left in the dust. Once Microsoft stops updating you and starts removing knowledge base files, your chances of getting help dwindle significantly, as do your chances of keeping your system working. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is MS patches everything but Windows. Why don't I just read the whole thing as if I spoke English? MS patches everything but Windows 7. The choices are, I don't mind, I'm a Windows 10 user. I don't mind, I use a real operating system. And no! So far, we've got 32 votes, and I don't mind to use a real operating system is ahead by one vote to no.
That was a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. And I didn't even take a full breath. I should have. We'd still be doing it. And I know you'll have more to say about this, because if you're a Windows 7 user, you're being abandoned. You may have a little something you want to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums, the second forum down. is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the very first item under the poll discussion is 7 July 18. MS patches everything but Windows 7. And we've talked about this any number of times. People are constantly saying, no, we Windows 7 people are getting updates. The only updates you've been getting are security updates, and it looks like those are stopping now as well.
And Defender was never a good product anyways.
Right. It's not like you're losing anything by not updating Defender.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you're using Windows 7, you are being abandoned. Certainly Windows Defender users are abandoned, and Windows 7 users in general are abandoned. So it really is time, particularly if you're still on a computer you bought in 2002, which I suspect there are some of you out there, you're going to find that you no longer can run dang near anything. So it's time to move on. I hate to say it, but it's time to move on.
And well, it's just like a lot of folks, you know, they had the Windows 7 machines or wound up going to 8 and then switched over to Windows 10 to try it out. And even those machines are slowly dying in the fact that, you know, with each one of these updates, it's putting more and more stress on the machines because it wants to do more and expects you can and have the hardware to do it.
Yeah, look.
And it's not going to happen, folks. Your old Windows 7 machine was great back in the day when you were running Windows 7 and all that good stuff, but it's not keeping up with the times. I hate to say it, but computers nowadays are expendable. You know, they're disposable. They expect them to wear out very quickly.
And let's face it, over at Microsoft, all the people who write Windows and all the people who test Windows have a minimum of quad-core machines with 16 gig of RAM. So they're not testing your single-core Pentium 3 with, you know, 4 gig of RAM. They don't care about you, to be entirely honest. And so you're now at the point where you've got to look at either an alternate operating system, which for you folks would be a version of Linux, or it's time to move to a newer machine. And I hope if you are running on a fairly old machine that you back up constantly because that machine will die. You know, we say that all the time, and people don't believe us. And we all hear, my machine died. What do I do? Well, take your backup. Well, I don't have
I had one gentleman, same thing, brought in one of these little pizza boxes.
Yeah.
And he says, but the machine is just over a year old. I said, and the hard drive totally crashed. I said, well, there's, you know, it's just like a light bulb. It's an electronic device. There are no guarantees. I've had hard drives back in the day die right out of the package.
Right.
You're taking a crapshoot every time you turn that thing on, whether it's going to spin up and go.
Right.
I don't care if it's a day old or a couple hours old.
Microsoft,
they're all going to fail at some point.
Right. Microsoft published some statistics. They have truly, literally millions upon millions of hard drives around the world. And they published the statistics on how long the drives last. Hard drives last an average of 5 years. Now, that's an average. It means some drives last 10 years and some drives die right out of the box. So if your hard drive dies, that's just normal. There's nothing else you can say about that. That's just normal. And the same is true of all the components in your machine. Each of them has an average lifespan. And that means that some live twice as long and some die right out of the box. It's in the computer industry, they've appropriated the horrible term infant mortality rate. And computers have them as well as everything else. And so if you are under warranty, then at least you get new hardware out of the deal. But nobody warranties your software. Nobody warranties your data.
Right.
So if you have backups, you will be better off. And it doesn't take a lot to make backups. It may take you some time to set it all up so it happens automatically, out to the cloud somewhere, for example, or whatever. But
It's time well spent.
It's time well spent because you do it once and you never have to think about it again. A lot of people are doing Google drive.
Yep.
Where they will put the stuff out there, and you can pay $100 a year for a terabyte of space, for Pete's sake. And it's not a lot of money for, you know, it's insurance. It's like any other insurance. Mm-hmm. You hope that you've lost that money, but if it happens that you need it, it's money well spent.
Especially if these documents are even more important, and it's a free service too through Google, is putting your photos, taking the time and putting the photos up to the cloud, because you can put them up there and it's free. You know, as long as what, 16K or less?
16 megapixels.
Yeah. They're you can, unlimited storage.
Yep.
As long as they don't go over that, and then even then, you've still got, what is it? What's the storage on the photos now? I don't worry about
it. It's unlimited.
No, I mean if you go over the limit.
Oh, then you're in the same okay. area for the other thing. And yeah. I lied, by the way. They've reduced it. If for 100 gigabytes a month, it's for 100 gigabytes, it's $2 a month. $2 a month for 100 gig.
That is insane.
It's
$24
a year.
If you don't take advantage of that.
Free. If you want a terabyte.
Yeah. What's that going to break the bank?
It's now $10 a month.
Oh.
$120 a year.
But again,
for a terabyte of space. A terabyte.
And that doesn't include your photos. If your photos are of, you know.
Right. If your photos fit within that space of 16 megapixels or fewer, then and you can
and
always.
And that is still
say,
a very high quality.
That's still
high
quality.
You know.
Most phones do 12 megapixels.
Yeah.
So 16 is generous. And in fact, when you set it up, you have two choices, high quality or original quality. And the original quality is whatever your phone takes.
Mm-hmm.
High quality is a maximum of 16 megapixels. Most people won't have a difference because they've got a 12 or 14 megapixel
camera.
They're using
their phone to take pictures now anyways.
Right. My Galaxy S5 is 16 megapixels. So I'm still good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only if you get one of the super phones, and there are very few of them out there.
Yeah, that will go higher than that.
Because, right.
Again, the human eye can't really notice that much difference.
Right. I helped a friend set up her iPhone to save Google Photos,
mm-hmm.
Photos to Google. Photo.
Yeah,
and it took a while. I said, you know, really, you need to do this at home on
just set it up
under
and start
Wi-Fi.
An update. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but you know, she said, well, I have unlimited data, so I said, okay, whatever you want to do is fine with me. So we did it. You know, we did it right where we were, and she. And it probably took 2 days at that speed and rate. But she got, you know, all her pictures are now up on Google Drive, which means every time she takes a picture, it backs up automatically.
And they're up there forever.
And she can search them because that's what Google does, is search.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of amazing.
That's one thing a lot of folks don't realize. Once your photos are up there, folks, I was pointing this out to a customer. I see, and you can go up there and you can sort by anything. I go, what do you mean? I said, all right, I got all these photos up there. And I typed in car.
Yep.
I boom, hit enter. And it brought up all my pictures with cars in it. I go, oh, I didn't know that. I said, yeah, you can search on any particular item that you want. Dogs. And any of your pictures up there that have a dog in it, boom, it'll find them.
And if you have tagged somebody.
Yep. Person's
then
name.
You just need to say Fred,
yep.
And all the Fred pictures come up. I did that. I was showing it to somebody, and I typed in white car, and several pictures came up with white cars, and then a picture, and he said, I got it wrong. That's a guy standing in front of a blue car. I said, look through the window behind it in the parking lot is a white car.
Yeah. Hey, it's smart.
It's Google. They can do that, and so you can get all of that, and it's all free. I do not understand why people don't take advantage of this. You can put all your documents up there for free or cheap, depending on how many documents you have. You can put all your other stuff up there, your pictures up there for free. It's silly not to. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. At Soundbites is member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you, of course, can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
It's funny how both of us, you know, kind of hesitate. You know, you say your name, then we... There's the difference.
We wait for Dave. We wait for Steve. Steve Ray is one step ahead of law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding among the Arizona Badlands. Maybe he's gone up to the Colorado Badlands by now.
Could be.
Badlands all over the place out there. All right, so here's another one of those things. Your email might not be safe from prying eyes, whether you're using Gmail, Yahoo Mail, or Outlook. And especially if you're using third-party email clients. A recent report revealed how some developers have no qualms about letting their employees read emails that pass through their apps. Google has responded with a blog post that explains how it has mechanisms in place to prevent such abuse, except said mechanism doesn't seem to protect users from such third-party apps, and maybe even from Google itself. Google has stopped giving human employees access to emails after reports of his business practice came to light. And while its own policies prevent that, it appears to have little control over what app developers outside Google do with those emails. And according to those developers, it's common knowledge text dirty secret. Google says not quite. It vets developers of apps and services that access emails. That vetting process uses both automated and manual screening, which according to the search giant involves assessing an app's privacy policy and how accurately they represent themselves. Considering how the well-known business practices has been in use for quite a while now, that process doesn't seem to be very reassuring. Google also says that it suspends apps that break its rules, but according to those reports, it's never done so in practice. Google also lays part of the responsibility on the users, explaining how they can review and revoke permissions that they give to apps for accessing their emails. They can also check the non-Google apps that have access to their Google data through their account security checkup. One problem with this admittedly useful control, that it doesn't actually clue users in on how the app developers or companies may or may not have their employees read the email. Granting an email app permission to view and manage emails is, of course, par for the course. But unless users dig into user agreements in terms of service, they will never find out that they have granted those developers and service providers permission to have humans read those emails. It's almost a fact of email life that emails are, at the very least, scanned in the name of spam filtering. Google assures its Gmail users that it does not do so for the sake of serving ads. It also says that no one at Google ever reads your mail, but it does make two exceptions. First is when you give your consent, which people often do. I'm having a problem with my email. This one email won't load or whatever, whatever. And then they will say, may we have permission to look at it? And if you want them to fix it, you will say yes. But the second is when they're investigating security matters and Google doesn't say if they need your consent for the latter. So do you know who's reading your email? And that's anybody's email. I mean, from anybody. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Now, although I said Google throughout that thing, it's also Yahoo, it's Outlook, it's Apple's mail, it's everybody's mail. Do you know what you said okay to when you signed the user agreement?
And nobody reads it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about 8-1 that you didn't even bother to read. It's probably 10-1 that you didn't even bother to read it.
I would say 99.9% of the folks out there just go, yeah, click.
Could be 1,000-1. At any rate, it's a very long shot. So most people don't bother, and then they get surprised. They get outraged when somebody says, well, you know, they're
horrified.
Reading your email. Oh, I never said I could do that. Yeah, you did, actually. You okayed that.
You got click happy.
You got click happy.
And just, yeah, and went ahead.
Yep.
You figure, oh, yeah, it's just the same. They're not charging me anything, so I don't care.
Yep.
That's all they worry about is if they're going to be charged for it.
Yep. And that's you know, that's certainly a legitimate thing to decide. But once you've decided that, you have to really understand the entire set of ramifications of that decision.
Yeah.
And one of them is that you don't know what happens to your email when it's not on your computer. When you send it out over the ether, it goes through at least one, if not many, machines, and you have absolutely no guarantee that one of those machines somewhere along the way isn't capturing all your emails.
Especially if you're sending some, you know, personal information to a person. They go, well, all right, I'm going to need this, this, and this so that I can send this on to you or mail something to you. So you go ahead and give them your name, your address, your phone number, your zip code. You know, boom, they're golden.
Now, when you are on a website and they ask you for that information, if it says HTTPS up in the corner, if you see that little lock or it says secure and it's green or whatever, however they do that, then you know that only you and the other end can read those those data. Nobody else can interpret or rather intercept that. But email is plain text, and it goes through Lord knows how many servers before it gets to you. And there is no guarantee. This is how we what we call man-in-the-middle attacks. If you're somewhere in the middle, if I'm sitting between you and them, and your data goes through my machine, there's nothing that stops me from capturing those data and then analyzing them at a later date.
Yeah.
Now, when it is HTTPS data, when it is secure data, then you've got it encoded with very strong encryption. They could probably break it in about 100,000 years.
Yeah,
but I suppose that's safe enough
if they work hard at it.
If they work hard at it, that's pretty much safe enough. But when you're sending plain text, it takes nothing to read that email. Nothing. So be careful. It always makes me crazy when somebody says, I'm going to send you your new password. No, you are not going to send me my new password.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, I get to immediately change it.
Right.
Or we'll send you your PIN number.
It's a temporary one.
No, you won't. Right.
If it's a temporary one, then I can go in and then change it to what I want. That's fine.
Right. I've written a system now that one of the things it does is if you want to change your password, I use your email to send you a code that you have to type in. And I realize that that's a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a vulnerability for about 2 seconds.
Right.
Because the person who's requested that code is sitting at their machine waiting to type it in.
Mm-hmm.
Other people would get the code and say, oh, I have to go to this website, and now I have to figure out how to load the right page, the fake page that I create for that, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's
a lot of work.
Secure. Somebody will get that. Somebody could.
Yep.
Could get that code, but it's a code that's only alive for about 5 seconds. So that's generally
far less
speaking,
risk.
Right. It's far less risky. And now with the GDPR, you have to pay attention to that stuff. But the reality is that if you are on email, whatever you send can be intercepted by any one of a million people. And everybody talks about Google because Google's motto, of course, is don't be evil. But they have been known to be evil in the past. But it's everybody. It's any place that gets your mail. And I don't care who it is. If it's Apple, if it's Microsoft, if it's Time Warner, if it's anybody, if they have your email, then they can, in fact, do they read it? Probably not. I mean, I'll give you about 99.9% that they don't. But you should be aware that the possibility is that they can.
Yep.
Right. I used to have a T-shirt that said, why, yes, I can read your email. Somebody gave it to me. I had to stop wearing it because it made people nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, intellectually, I suppose they knew I could read all their email, but having it rubbed in their faces like that was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Oh, I'm having a problem with LibreOffice.
Yeah.
It's very puzzling to me. I write articles for a newsletter, and sometimes when I put a question mark at the end of the title of something, it won't be, it's very strange. LibreOffice won't save it for me. What I get sometimes is, and it's actually, it's not just when I have a question but rather than save it, I get this, I have it up on my computer now, I get this screen that says saving the document, and the name of the article is why can't I have a business of in my own home? It, then it reads non-existent object.
Right.
So the file does not exist.
Here's the problem. You don't mean the title of the article. You mean the file name.
Okay, yes.
Right? Yeah, okay. And here's why. There are things in every operating system, whether you're on Windows or Linux or a Mac, called wildcards.
Wildcards.
And they are placeholders. So, for example, one is an asterisk.
Right.
So I can say, you know, dir*.com, and it will show me all the files that end in .com. Because the star is a wild card, it means any character .com.
Okay.
The question mark is also a wild card.
Hmm.
And it means any one character. So, for example, if I were to say hello, hello?*.txt, I would see hello1.txt, hello2.txt, hello3. So the question mark is a wild card. So what you're really saying is not save a file called hello question mark, but save a file called hello that ends in anything.
Huh.
And the operating system cannot understand that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep. But that's why that happens. Question marks and asterisks are both wild cards and cannot be used in a file name.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, also, you can't use a divide by symbol, the forward slash underneath the question mark.
Right. Okay.
It used to be, and I don't remember Windows 10, but it used to be you couldn't also use the backslash, which is the reverse of that.
Right. Right. I think you're right about that as well.
Yeah. So be careful about wildcards. Any file name that includes a wildcard really means all the file names like it, and that makes no sense when it's trying to save a file. And the error message that you get back is stupid. I understand that.
Yeah.
But that's what's really happening.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, our pleasure.
Yep.
Thanks.
Do you have time for another
quickly
comment?
Sure.
I just wanted to run. I've listened very carefully over the years and have bought into your comments about backing up, and I might go a little overboard, but one of the questions I had was, you suggested in a recent column, and I think you talked about it on the radio as well, is making a system image separate from just putting it on a disk or on a separate hard drive.
Right.
And I've done that, but what you've also commented about making or saving the original disk that had the, in this case, Windows 10
right.
OS on it. I took advantage of the, quote, free upgrade, end of quotes, that you've talked about a lot, got Windows 10 on a Windows 7 machine. But I was able to go back in, and I think I got it off a backup, the Windows 10 upgrade, and I put that on a separate disk. Would that be equal to something I physically bought in a store if I wanted to?
It's not quite the same, no. However,
yeah.
You can download the Windows 10
disk image.
Itself, the ISO, which is the thing that you would burn to a CD.
Okay.
And you can do that right from Microsoft's website. It's Microsoft.com.
Right.
/software-download.
Okay.
/Windows 10. And that's all lowercase and no spaces.
Okay.
And you can download the Windows ISO now. Everybody's going, oh, great, free Windows 10. No, you still have to have the serial number.
Right.
In order to actually activate mm-hmm. it and make it work. But you can download that and burn it to a CD if you want to. Mm-hmm. And now you've got a legit CD right. of Windows 10 It might be a DVD at this point. I forget how large it is, but yeah, you can DVD, download that and burn it to a DVD and have a legit backup DVD to reinstall with.
Right, and you're still going to need your key code.
Right, and I think it's on the back of the computer, isn't it?
Should be.
Or on the bottom. This is the laptop.
Although I don't honestly know if Windows 7 keys work anymore.
It is a little late.
Yeah, it is a little late. But it certainly can't hurt to give it a try. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay, I'm done. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks. We'll take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco. We've got somebody else on the line and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still?
Still. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Summer flings may not mean very much, but a fresh Apple regulatory filing sure makes it look as if... you may plan to spread a little sunshine for Macs and iPads this summer, this side of the summer recess. Apple has filed 5 new iPad and 5 new Mac models with the Eurasian Economic Commission database. The new Apple items are described as running iOS 11 and macOS 10.13 High Sierra, which seems to mean it's possible the company intends to introduce these things this side of summer, if it does so at all. Well, actually, this side of fall. It's summer now, but you know what I mean. This evidence can't be considered as much more than idle gossip and speculation. History shows Apple has made filings like this in the past with no subsequent result. It is also possible different regulators have different filing requirements, and these filings may relate to existing products, although it doesn't seem to. Apple, which means, like with any Apple rumor, nobody knows anything. Apple hasn't introduced any significant Mac product upgrades this year. And the only iPad launch so far is that of the rather impressive entry-level iPad with Apple Pencil support. Given the importance of both product ranges and its reignited love for the pro user market, Apple may also hope to boost hardware sales as its fiscal year quarter 3 deadline looms at the end of July with a surprise summer Mac and iPad kiss. What gives this speculation a little more weight is this week's revelation of new Geekbench benchmark figures that mention a new alleged 13-inch model, MacBook Pro 15.2, that runs an Intel Core i7 Coffee Lake CPU. Could the timing of both these sets of rumors mean something is up? In recent months, there has been a series of stories suggesting Apple's relationship with Intel is becoming a little more tepid than before. This week, we learned the company may hope to make its own 5G modem for iPhones in 2020 rather than using Intel. This is part of a multi-pronged attempt on Apple's part to bring manufacturing of key components in-house, almost certainly due to lack of innovation in the AIM Alliance era, and a response to subsequently finding itself forced to use components manufactured by business competitors. Apple's transition from being an outsourcing company to becoming a manufacturing firm in its own right continues, at least so far as key components are concerned. I'm going to stress that placing bets on Apple rumors is usually less rewarding than buying a lottery ticket. All the same, those new Macs seem fast, while even iPad Pros steadily become all the Mac many people need. Ready for a new Mac? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And
even the Mac side of the world is getting away from, you know, the big boxes, too. I mean, PCs have been doing it for a while now. You don't see all these big towers and everything else. When you go to the stores and all that, you're seeing just laptops and tablets.
Right.
We have gotten to a society that, you know, are going smaller, lighter, and a little more portability.
Well, exactly right. People like portability. You pay for portability. A laptop is more expensive than the same specifications in a desktop. That's just the way it is. And so if you're one of those people who never takes their laptop anywhere, don't buy a laptop.
Yeah.
Buy a desktop. Save yourself some money. But... if you are going to take it out and about and wander around, then certainly a laptop is the thing for you. And a lot of people are buying them. And a lot of people are just walking around with tablets now. Mac, the iPad is very popular. So are many Android tablets. A lot of people just walk around with those now. And if you're not doing anything that involves a significant amount of typing, then a tablet is really fine. You know, if particularly now when you can use voice commands, asking Siri or Google to you know give you this information rather than having to type it in, you can send text messages by voice. You can dictate. I use Google Dictate all the time, and it's not called Google Dictate. I dictate into Google Docs all the time, and it works amazingly well. And I do a lot of, as my arthritis gets worse, I do a lot of
it's a lot easier.
Text messages.
And you get, that's the other thing too, though, is you can go to so many different places and they've got free Wi-Fi.
Right.
You can go just about anywhere and hook up to this Wi-Fi device or that Wi-Fi device to, you know, do your emails or whatever you want to do.
Right. 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 And it's getting more and more common to see people carrying large phones or small tablets.
Yep.
Around. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. I was listening to you talking about emails being insecure and all that kind of stuff. And I had a kind of a different wrinkle on that communication line. I was going into State Farm to pay a couple of bills. And I logged into the website using my username and password, and it comes up and says, help us protect our security. We need you to change your password. And I'm looking, and it's, I mean, I went to them.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, it wasn't, you sent me an email, and it's suspect. I mean, I logged in and used my password and everything. I said, we're sending you an email. And I'm like, okay. So I, and it would not let me go any further with the site. I couldn't do anything. Couldn't pay my bill or anything. It forced me to go, and it said, there will be a link. It's only good for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, something like that. So I got off of that, and I went to my email. Sure enough, it was there. Went in, clicked this link. I did, and it redirected me immediately right back to the State Farm HTTPS State Farm website and said, you've received this because we want you to change your password. So I did. And I said, log out, you know, exit this email and re-log into the site. And I went back to State Farm, logged myself in using the new password, and it let me into State Farm.
Sure.
So I'm going, okay, so how is that? I know, I'm sure there's a thought process to doing that, and those steps is more secure than just having saying you need to change your password when you log into the website.
Well, it's a form of two-factor authentication, right? Because if I've stolen your information and then they want me to change my password, if I've stolen your information and they want me to change the password, that email goes to you, not to me. So unless I've also stolen your email password,
okay,
which hopefully for you is a different password,
it is,
then I can't get that code. In fact, on the thing that I've been creating, I say right in the email something along the lines of, if you didn't attempt to change your password, don't worry, nobody can change your password without this code. So it's basically the same thing. So unless the likelihood that your email is going through the same machine that's owned by the person who might have your username and password. You see what I'm saying? The likelihood that the person who stole your
it's pretty small
password also runs an email relay that you just happen to go through is infinitesimally small.
You got better chances of getting hit by lightning
in the Holland Tunnel twice. So yeah, so basically yes, it's pretty secure. Nothing
okay,
is 100%.
When I hit the link, it came up and said, "Hi, Andrew." You know, and so it was
right.
Like it's and it, they said the link is only good for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, and it's like, we're expecting you to come and talk to us.
Right.
And it popped right up, and it didn't. I figured it was going to make me log in again, and it didn't. It says, hi, Andrew, complete this screen.
Yep. And that, and because it because you logged in, it sent you to that link, and that link is a one-time URL.
One-time good deal only.
Right, and that is linked specifically to you.
Time sensitive.
If I used one, it would be a different URL. If Dave used one, it would be a different URL. So in that sense, they would have to get, and it was probably a fairly long alphanumeric combination. And somebody would have to guess that within the 10 minutes or whatever in order to.
It came up, and I mean, it said statefarm.com/, and then the rest was gobbledygook. So.
Right. And so they would, A, have to guess that. B, do it before you got the email and went to that site, and then beat you to it. But clearly, that's the chances of that happen. Is it possible? Sure, I suppose. You know, in an infinite universe, anything's possible.
Well, now we're back in the Howland Tunnel with the double lightning strike.
You got it.
Yeah, there's a cartoon that says one guy says, "What's wrong?" He said, "I just had a thought." And the other guy said, "What is it?" And he said, "If the universe is infinite and all things are possible, that means somewhere Jesus is Batman." Okay. But the likelihood is infinitesimal.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the way the thing works here too. The likelihood of somebody properly aligning the stars to both get into your account, intercept the email, and get to typing it in before you do is very small. Very, 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 very
small.
Go
on a vacation, come back, and they still aren't close.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, and then when they tell you to put in your create your new password, I think they listened to you. It had to be between 16 and 35 characters.
Nice!
Perfect.
And it had to have letters, numbers, at least one capital, at least one number, and one special character. And they gave you a list of the special characters you were allowed to use.
Nice.
Perfect.
So your new password is, this is all Nick Francesco's fault, that, and a bunch of characters.
No, not quite, but... It irritated me because I had a really nice password for them that was 16 characters,
right,
and had a special character and all that other stuff, and it was one that I could remember, but it wouldn't make any sense to anybody but me, and I was real happy with it, and then they arbitrarily say, oh, you can't use that one anymore. Now you got to find another one that does the same thing.
Right. Well, now they're finding that asking people to regularly change their passwords is not secure because people tend to use, you know, hello one, hello two, hello three.
Yeah.
So by having somebody create a very long password that is cryptographically complex, then you may not have to change it again for a year.
Well, I think it's about, they hit me about once a year.
Yeah.
They make me do it. And, but the only thing I use that site for is to pay my bills. So I'm not in there all the time.
Right.
So it just feels like I just did it yesterday. But yesterday was however many bill pays ago.
But of course you're using a password manager, so you don't have to worry about that.
No, I don't.
Busted.
I don't use a password manager. I've never trusted them.
Well, understandable. Understandable. I have a friend who keeps everything in a particular spot in his or her home, and you would be hard pressed to
find
imagine
it.
That's where it would be. So yeah, I get it. I do.
Well, and the thing is, I started not using it and developed a method that works for me, and that's fine. And you and I had discussions where, you know, it's like, okay, if somebody breaks into your computer, then and that password manager's there, you know, but then you explain somehow it's encrypted using...
It's encrypted, and then you have to have the password to get you into the password manager.
Yeah.
Oh, and let me take a moment, after all the funerals and wakes I've been to in the last few weeks, to bring up a subject nobody likes to think about, make sure your spouse or significant other or somebody knows the password to your password manager, so that in the unthinkable event, somebody can get at your stuff and do what needs to be done. Make sure somebody, and an easy way to do that is to write it down, the password manager password, along with instructions on how to bring up the password manager. Seal it in an envelope and then write your name across the back of the envelope, or use a sealing wax if you can, if you have that, and seal the envelope and put it in your safe. And then in the event, they have a way to get at your stuff. And that includes all your passwords, including banks and everything else, because, you know, we all protect that stuff now, but what happens when we pass? So make sure you do that as well. Everybody should do that. If you are not using a password manager, please start using one. And if you are using a password manager, make sure that your executor or somebody has a way to get into that password manager. All right, thanks, Andy. We got to go.
Okay.
That's it for the first hour. You've managed to wander through an entire hour of this nonsense with hopefully a fairly straight face, and we'll be back again to do a whole lot more of it. We have Dave Enright and we have Nick Francesco. We do not have Steve Ray today. He is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding in the mesas of the Badlands, and which means you're not listening over YouTube, but you are listening over the live stream or over an actual radio. Terrestrial radio, what a concept. But we'll be back with a whole nother hour of this nonsense on the other side, so don't go anywhere. Very important, or spend a long time there. Just hang around, and we'll be together again for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we've managed to continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And yes, for those of you just tuning in, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding out in the Badlands among the mesas and the
wherever
gorges and the whatever out there.
Prairie dogs.
Yeah, out with hiding in the prairie dog camps, having a grand old time for himself, I suppose. But we're here doing this, which means there's no YouTube today. But of course, we're streaming over the internet, and we're live on terrestrial radio. So feel free to if you know anybody, put it out on social media. We're still here. We're just not on YouTube today. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Walworth, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Yes, good afternoon, guys. I was wondering if you've got something that you could recommend for monitoring the both internal and external internet. I have a nonprofit. I have a Raspberry Pi, and it pings Google and the internal internet using SmokePing,
sure,
Cacti, and NetData. Is there anything else that you can recommend? The problem is that every now and then their internet connection through DSL, unfortunately, and that's all I could get, is slowed down, and some of the data, like from SmokePing, says that when I ping Google certain times of the day, it really takes a long time. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
half a second or so.
So you're mainly just checking to see if it's up or how fast it is or what?
Actually, both.
Okay.
Because sometimes it does go down, and I notice that, somebody may be running a microwave or setting up their own hotspot or something like that, which interferes with the Wi-Fi. So I've got, you know, smoke ping and cacti looking at that. So it's looking at internal and external. So with those three programs, you know, they do okay. But I was wondering if you could recommend anything else I can add to this Raspberry Pi, which runs in the background, and it, you know, every 10 minutes it automatically runs these tasks and logs the data on the computer.
Right. Well, there is
there are others, but you know, again, you're talking about DSL. And at certain times of the day, DSL is just going to slow down, and it's gotten to be very unreliable. That's why you don't see them advertising for DSL much anymore, because it is so slow.
Well, yeah. There is a command called ifquery, which will tell you, well, that really tells you more about what the network configuration is. Mm-hmm. I do what you do. I use those programs to make sure that all my machines are up. And I've never really found anything I prefer to those.
Okay. Yeah. This, I'll add that this is an organization up in the Adirondacks, and, you know, it's right at the edge of DSL. It's about 15,000 feet, and unfortunately they can't get anything else. You know, the satellite is too expensive, and,
yep,
and cable wants, you know, like $20,000 to, you know, extend.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
you're caught between a rock and a hard place.
Is what we're going to get, I guess. But I want to make sure you know, we're getting everything that we're supposed to, which is about anywhere from like 1.5 to maybe 3 at the best.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
The only other thing you might use is Traceroute, but that really just tells you what might be the slowest connection in your chain.
What's that called? Trace link?
Trace route.
Oh, trace route.
And so you give it trace route and then like google.com or a number 8.8.8.8. And it actually traces out the entire set of links and how many milliseconds it takes to get an answer back from that leg of the journey.
What about also checking the channels on the router?
Yeah, I've set it up. There's actually a Wi-Fi extender to get to some of the cabins, so that's on channel 1, and then there's the base camp Wi-Fi, which is set up on channel 6, and then on channel 11 is CloudTrax.
Okay.
Which has a number of jump off points, and I noticed that, you know, after 3 links or whatever, it gets very slow. So
sure.
You know, we can monitor the CloudTrax, but we're trying to optimize everything there. So those 3 things are all in their separate channels, and I don't think I can do any better than that.
And you did a study on the channels, though, to, you know, kind of analyze different times of the day if the channels are getting overloaded also?
No, I haven't done that because either I don't know how to configure the programs that I have, or, you know, I just don't know. How would you do that other than, you know, live monitoring, I guess?
Well, one of the things that you can do is when you get a response back from something like, ping, you can limit the number of pings you give it, of course, and you can get a that result and then save it to a file.
Yeah,
with the date or the time, right?
Yeah, so yeah, I do that, and it does show certain times of the day and night that are much worse, but I have no idea
why
that is.
Sure. Yeah. Some of it will have to do with radio signals, because it depends on how far apart your repeaters are and how powerful they are, because many radio stations change their signal direction at night. And so what you may get, for example, we have to do that. I mean, that's mandated by the FCC. That's not something people just randomly do. And so during the day, you may be getting a weak signal from a nearby radio station. But at night, they're mandated to change their direction. And so you get a strong signal, which now will interfere with whatever network stuff you have farthest away from the base.
Yeah, because then you get also what they call skip. and Skip right. can bounce off the atmosphere, and that, especially during the evenings and that. That used to be the big thing back in the day with ham radio and CB radios. In the evenings, because of the changing the signals, you got more skip. So signals would bounce all over the place. You need to pick up people across the seas or wherever. And the same is true with the internet and the wireless.
Okay, so I've been looking for stuff mainly in the 2.4 gigahertz band, and there's also a 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi setup as well, but there could be something outside of those bands that's interfering.
Yeah, exactly. Could there's going to be a lot of bleed over, and there's going to be all kinds of stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. You can, there are a couple of things that you can try. One is there are some apps for phones that give you the Wi-Fi signal strength. And then you start one of those, and you can create a Wi-Fi map by literally walking around and every few feet write down the strength of the signal. Every few feet, every 100 feet, whatever, yeah. whatever. And writing down the I use one called Wi-Fi Analyzer, and it shows me all the signals that are out there and how strong they are, and that helped me to find. In my home, it helped me to find a channel that nobody else was using.
Okay. And especially in our house.
What's strange is that when I'm standing in one position and don't move, the signal strength changes sometimes dramatically.
Well, that again, could be because of interference from other things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we had at RIT, we had a room where the signal would drop out quite regularly, and we finally realized that there was a microwave oven outside the door between the room and the hotspot. So anytime okay. somebody, you know,
hit
warmed
up
the hot pocket,
yep.
that room lost all connectivity.
Yeah, but the microwave oven signal won't show up on the Wi-Fi analyzer,
right.
though, right? Will,
right.
Will it? Yeah, okay.
No, and so that's why it took it. We, you know, we were analyzing, you know, this is RIT. They've got analytic tools that I can't even pronounce. And none of them were showing anything until we realized, wait a minute, I can hear the microwave going. And the microwave just stopped, and the signal's back.
But again, on him, though, if he's up in the mountains, all you got to do is maybe move over to another room, and depending on what's in the way, the signal's bouncing off of, you know, what mountain or, you know, whatever.
The other thing you can do, but it's not a cheap solution, is to get a mesh network. I don't know what you're using now, but I suspect you're using something with relays.
Yeah,
signal
it's
boosters.
Cloud Tracks, and it is like an open mesh kind of thing, and that's for one set of cabins that go off in another direction. So
right. Well, the more mesh nodes you add, the more reliable your network becomes because the signal has to go less distance.
Okay.
Right. So if, for example, you buy a three-node mesh, three nodes for your mesh network, and then you buy two more and put them in between, your signal only goes half the distance to each one, and therefore the signal remains stronger.
Okay. One of the complaints, though, the guest has with the mesh part of the network is they may be attached to, you know, one part of the mesh, and then that will disconnect and then connect to a stronger one, and then that will disconnect and then connect to another one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that is an issue if they are. Mesh network is an art rather than a science. And most people won't have that problem because in your home, for example, you have one at one end of the room, one at another of the house, and another at the other end of the house, and they don't interfere with each other. But you're right in terms of. If you've got enough of them, you may find yourself connecting willy-nilly back and forth. Theoretically, any modern operating system handles that without an issue.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like I got some more detective work to do. I appreciate your thoughts and answers on this.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yep. Keep us appraised. Apprised.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, especially up there in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's got to be darn tough.
Well, and that's why Google, for example, is trying to do Project Loon, which is to use Wi-Fi with balloons. mm-hmm. that hang above an area, and why a couple of the others are using drones or whatever to do exactly the same thing. Say, by yeah. providing it like from a balloon, you get better coverage and essentially closer coverage. Now, up in the Adirondacks, I can't imagine that that balloon wouldn't be swept away by windstorms and everything.
With, yeah, with the wind current.
Pretty regularly. Yeah. But the concept is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the other thing that we didn't actually talk about is where are these meshes? If they're not up on poles, mm-hmm. it might be a good idea to put them up, which now takes them out of the path of things that might be in the way. Because if somebody brings a microwave or a refrigerator, I don't know what kind of camp it is, whether it's transient or how it works. But the idea is, or if you put up a tent with a lot of metal poles, you may be interfering.
Get it up on some type of tower or something.
Right, just any kind of like a telephone pole.
Yeah.
You know, get a treated pole, mm-hmm. stick it in the ground, and put the thing
throw
up,
it
on,
up
top.
On the top.
Boom,
yeah.
done. Now, you've got to run wire to it because it's electrical, yeah. yada, yada, yada. But the idea being
it's
that...
very low voltage.
Right. But the idea is if you keep it up above ground level, the likelihood of somebody parking a car in front of it or, you know, whatever is much less.
A lot stronger.
Problem. Right. And the signal will then carry a little better and have less interference. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Still.
Still. Unbelievable. Well, here's a thing I hate to say.
Mm-mm.
Actually, I don't, because that's not a problem for me. Bad news for Samsung phone owners.
Not me.
Not you. Some devices are randomly sending your camera roll photos to your contacts without permission.
Oops.
Users are complaining about this issue on Reddit and the company's official forums. One user says his phone sent all his photos to his girlfriend. I certainly hope that that was okay. The messages are being sent through Samsung's default texting app, Samsung Messages. According to the reports, the Messages app doesn't even show users that files have been sent. Many just find out after they get a response from the recipient of the random photos sent to them. A Samsung spokesrobot says that it's aware of the reports and that its technical teams are looking into it.
Especially if it sent them to ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly depending on the picture and who it got sent to. The forums indicate that the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus devices are affected but may not be the only ones afflicted with the bug. Samsung is encouraging those experiencing this issue to call the company directly at 1-800-SAMSUNG. That's 1-800-SAMSUNG. Some users are speculating that this issue has to do with the push of RCS messaging updates, including T-Mobile, which is the carrier for at least one of the affected phones. T-Mobile just issued its RCS update this week, starting with the Galaxy S7. An S7 Edge. The messaging standard is supposed to make texting look more like chatting with a modern messaging app, complete with read receipts and typing indicators. When reached for comment, a T-Mobile spokesrobot said, "Check in with Samsung on this. It's not a T-Mobile issue." Which is the long way of saying, shove off.
Yeah.
For now, Samsung owners... yeah. So that for now, Samsung owners can revoke Samsung Messages permissions to access storage to avoid the bug from sending their files out in the wild. Of course, they can also completely disable Samsung's messaging app and download and use Google's Messages app instead, which is what I did right at the very beginning. So I've never experienced this issue, nor will I, because the Samsung app is disabled. So what messaging app are you using? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800. 790-0415.
That's why I am so glad that I waited for the Pixel phone. This phone has been fantastic. It still is.
Yep. I mean, you got the original one, yeah?
Yeah, I've got the original one. It knock on wood there.
Yeah.
It's been great. Has not caused me any issues. Normally, you know, with the 2 being out and now the 3 coming out, you think, oh, gee, I want to move on to the next one. It's like, why? This one already takes great pictures. And, you know, all the great features of it. I mean, I didn't get all that extra bloatware and everything else because it came right from Google. It didn't have the YouTube on there and all this other stuff that they got to send because of Samsung that they're under contract or whatever to throw this other junk on there. It was nothing. I literally, when I first turned the phone on, had Google Chrome on there.
Yep.
And the email, Google email.
Yep.
Because that's what I had to quick set up for to download my contacts and everything else. Otherwise, it had to do a bunch of updates to update the operating system. And again, that's one of the other things I like, sort of like the Chromebook. Whenever I've had any of these major updates, I wake up in the morning with my phone and says, yep, it did this update overnight for you. You just got to restart your phone. Okay, I hit the button, restart, and this long update was done overnight. Yeah. I've never had to sit there, tie up my phone for a while and worry about that I'm using data. It's doing it on my wireless network at home, and it does it automatically.
Yep. And you should be getting updates to the phone through the end of this year if it's original Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice because they're guaranteeing 3 years of software updates.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the idea of the Pixel. The thing I don't know if it does, though, is wireless charging. I don't ever want to go back having to plug in a wire, ever.
I don't know if... I can't speak to that as far as the 2 or the 3. I know that originally you can't, unless you put some type of adapter on the back of it.
Right.
But... It charges so fast, though. I mean, I could be down to, say, 27%.
Yep.
Hook it up in my van while I'm driving during the day and hook it up for maybe an hour.
Yep.
Or less. I'll say an hour or less. And it all of a sudden will tell me, I'm fully charged. It charges super fast.
Yeah, it has what's called rapid charging, and I get that, and I love that.
You've gotten used to having wireless charging. Yeah, you get accustomed to it, and that's what you like. I mean, and I don't blame you there one bit. You know, you get into the groove of certain things in that, and that's just the way it's got to be.
Yeah, and the phone that I've really been looking at is the OnePlus 6. The problem is it's not on Verizon. It seems to be a pretty amazing phone, and it's not as expensive as some of the others, but the problem is it's not on Verizon. So,
Well, it might be in time.
It's unlikely. I don't think they have the right radios.
They get into that it can only be on this, say, AT&T network, and it can't be on Verizon.
So right.
It can be on this one, it can't be on that one.
Right. There are two main radio systems.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon uses one, everybody else uses the other. So it may well be that it can't be done, and that's too bad. But it looks, you know, it looks like an amazing kind of phone.
Is that the one you can add other features onto it, like a camera?
No, there is one like that. It's not the OnePlus, but it's there is another one very much like that, and it also that's kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. So the other features that you can snap on and add to it.
Yep.
Over
the years, there have been a couple of those that didn't really catch on, and I don't know why. But I love the idea of being able to change your phone to anything you want to change it to. You know, there's the Motorola now. It's the Moto something. Lets you snap on. There are a couple of things like a projector. So if you wanted to share a movie or whatever with some friends, you could do that. And a couple of other things that I don't remember what they are. Better camera. I know one does. One of them has one of those panoramic camera things that you can take a 360
yep.
shot. But yeah, so there's some pretty nifty specs on the OnePlus 6, but unfortunately it doesn't.
You know what would be cool, though, is to be able to have the phone and you have the watches like we have, be able to touch it, and then it goes out to the screen on your arm.
They've shown that, but
tie it to a phone, though.
Well,
tie it to like our Google phone, and that instead of pulling your phone out, you could just sit there and have it right there, you know, on your wrist.
They have shown that as a prototype, but they haven't got it yet. Also, I'm not sure how it would work on those of us with hairier arms.
You have to shave your arm.
But yeah, there's lots of very cool. And now, of course, now they're talking about flexible glass.
Yep.
Right. So they can make a thing that like would look like an armband. It would fit on your arm and be a screen. And so we're starting to see that stuff come out. We're starting to see them playing with it. There have been a couple of companies that have shown foldable screens. So you have something that looks like a phone, only you can open it up and now it's twice the screen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
On the inside. So you can look at it as if it were a phone and see a phone number and the time and all that, yada, yada.
You need more real estate to view something.
Right. Particularly if you're doing video chatting and stuff like that, you can now open it up and get a reading a book or whatever it is. You know, now it's a tablet and a phone.
And you know what? And I still sit back and think of the old days. Yes, I'm old, folks. When Dick Tracy, and they used to mock him with his phone, radio phone. Essentially, we've got that on our wrist right now. I can sit there to my phone, my watch, turn around, give it a command, whether to text or make a phone call or anything else, and it'll do it.
And there are models of watches that will, in fact, do video and all that other stuff. So... we're there. And of course, you're right. You and I are both old enough to remember party lines and having to walk to the phone, which is attached to the wall.
Or, you know what? Because they've already got it now with the heads up displays.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see that in cars too, to where your phone rings and then they'll be able to have a heads up display come up and, you know.
I don't know how dangerous that would be, but yes. And, of course, Google Glass, and there are a couple other companies that are doing Google Glass-like things now. And so there's plenty of stuff out there that's on the horizon as to whether or not... I loved the idea of Google Glass, but I guess not. That's the way that is sometimes, I suppose. But, some pretty interesting stuff on the horizon. All we have to do, I guess, is wait until somebody actually comes out with it.
Yeah, they'll do it just like they were testing the waters as far as, like we were talking about a few minutes ago, is the watch that you can sit there and touch and it projects the screen out onto your arm with that foldable glass. Yeah, that would work.
There's another cool one thing that I saw, which is just a little like a post, like if it was a pen cap that was about 3 or 4 times as big.
Mm-hmm.
You set it on your desk and you turn it on and it projects a keyboard on the desktop.
Okay.
And you can then type away. And when you're done, you just pick it up and take it with you. So it's Bluetooth, so you could connect it to your phone or your whatever.
Did you ever see the program Ransom?
Yes.
How he sits there and hooks up the phone and it puts up that hologram screen?
Yep.
And they're moving stuff around.
One of the things I really liked in the remake of something... The Mars thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger, they remade that. What was it called? Total Recall.
Oh, yes.
The guy gets a phone call, and he throws it onto the nearest window. So he gets one phone call on the side of a car. He gets another phone call on a shop window glass.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I love that. That was very clever. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Good afternoon. I run, the usual suite of protective programs that you guys recommend, one of which is Malwarebytes.
Right.
And last week or so, I've been getting warnings that four instances of malware on the system. So I go, I run it, I delete the malware, and it comes back saying that, it's been taken care of. But then... after a couple of hours, the exact same names are up, being flagged again. And I'm wondering what I can do to keep this from keep reoccurring, because it's happening literally every couple of hours.
What it sounds like one of a couple of things. Either you've got some sort of root virus that's causing stuff to get downloaded, or you're going to a particular website or whatever that has this stuff.
I'm pretty good about not doing that.
No, it's everywhere now. That's the problem. Anywhere that has any sort of ad network on it can produce this stuff. And it's sad and it's horrible, and I always feel like a hypocrite talking about it because I have ad networks on my websites. And I want to thank, by the way, everybody who over the last few weeks has donated. I very much appreciate that. I do have donations on my site, but very few people do that, and so consequently, I have ads, and I get it. But there are a lot of places that we go to regularly that are good places that get ads that are not good ads. And that's why it's hypocritical of me, but I recommend an ad blocker to prevent that. And also, it is certainly not an impossibility that you've got a rootkit in your machine. Generally speaking, I recommend that you take the machine to a professional to have them deal with rootkits, because it involves booting a separate operating system and cleaning it out that way, and that set of instructions is generally beyond the average user. So it is possible you have a rootkit that's installing other stuff, but the only way you'll know that is to get the thing thoroughly checked out by a professional.
So that's the only way, you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Not the answer I'd like to hear, but
sorry.
Not the answer I wanted to hear.
No, I get that. I do understand that, and I apologize for that, but it is the answer. It's not the answer you wanted, but it's the answer you needed, to paraphrase.
All right.
Batman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have fun. It is likely that it's just something downloaded from a website, but it is not impossible that it's a rootkit. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Well, we're as much of Soundbites as you're going to get this week, anyway.
Yeah, but this is the best it gets. It doesn't get any better.
Yep.
This week, at least.
So between May 29th and June 5th, more than 800,000 Facebook users were affected by a bug that unblocked people they had previously decided to block. The company started notifying users of the glitch on Monday, July 2nd, adding that it had been fixed and everyone has been blocked once again. According to the company, the bug was caused by a technical issue. The bug did not reinstate any Facebook friendships, and the majority of those affected only had one person unblocked. Those who were unblocked could not see content that a user shared with their friends, but they could see things posted to a wider audience, Facebook said, such as photos shared with friends of friends. Crucially, many people don't know that they can limit who sees what. Crucially, if someone had been unblocked, they could not have been able to contact the person who blocked them on Messenger. The fact that this was possible is a concerning breach of Facebook's users' online safety. The blocking tool helps people escape cyber abuse. 4 in 10 Americans, listen to this statistic, 4 in 10 Americans have experienced online harassment, according to the Pew Research Center, which ranges from name-calling to physical threats to stalking. Generally, younger people are more susceptible to this kind of abuse, and young women are twice as likely to be sexually harassed than men in their age group because most men are idiots. People of color are much more likely to be harassed than white people because white people are idiots, according to Pew. So did someone you blocked suddenly pop up on Facebook, or did you suddenly appear, did you suddenly see somebody you hadn't seen before? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. A toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
That's the whole thing, yeah. But, you know, too many folks live their lives in Facebook.
I know it. It's yeah, okay, look, I get it. It's a way to feel, you know, they say they're your friends. I've got 1,500 friends on Facebook. Most of them are not your friends. Most of them won't pick you up at the airport at 2 a.m. Most of them won't come and visit you in the hospital. Most of them won't loan you money if you need it. Most of them won't come to your friend's funeral. They're not your friends. They're people you chat with on Facebook. And that's nice, but don't confuse that with actual relationships.
Exactly.
But too many people do. Too many people do, and it's too bad, but there you have it.
It's just the way it is, you know, folks. It's way, a lot of folks, like you say, think they're connected, but, you know, I've gotten to where I don't even bother going there. It's all the other opinions, you know, like they say, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
And they're all full of lint.
Yep, and you know what? It's gotten to the point, no, don't care, don't, you know, there's this thing called the telephone, you want to talk, pick up the phone, give me a call.
Well, I originally got on because it's the only way I was going to stay in touch with my daughter.
Well, me, I still with family members once in a while, or if we're planning, the family picnic or that type of stuff, and I was on it for a long time, for a good while, you know, but it's just gotten to... Everybody's hating this person. They're ticked off at this and that. You know, it's like, you know what? There's bigger things in the world to worry about, and it's not going to get solved here. And leave me out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there was this whole issue of a bunch of people being unblocked, and Facebook eventually figured it out and reblocked all those people. So things are back to Facebook normal, which is a lovely and beautiful thing, I'm sure. But there was a while at which people were unblocked. And again, it doesn't sound like a big deal, right? I mean, so you unblock somebody, so what? But when that person has been stalking you, sexually harassing you, et cetera, it becomes a much bigger thing. And it's better that it got fixed. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, it's just I had a question about the end-user agreements. Isn't this kind of a situation where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't? If you don't agree to it, you can't use their service. Isn't that right?
Right. That's exactly right. So you have to make a choice between giving away your privacy. It's Sophie's choice, right? It's you give away your privacy or you don't use that particular app. But those are your choices. But the problem is most of us don't make a choice. Well, we do make a choice. We make a choice that whatever they want to do is okay with me.
If you were an attorney and had the time, I mean, you start to read this with good intentions. And I mean, after about the 15th page, you sort of give up. You don't have time for this nonsense. And I mean, hidden in the small print, I agree with you. But I mean, it's like Oath, for example, this new exotic thing that's come out of nowhere where I keep getting bugged all the time. Please update. So I just started to read it, and devote a whole evening to it. It's ludicrous. I mean, but that's the state of the art, isn't it?
Yep. And of course, that's why it's a 15-page document. If they just said, here's your terms of service, we're going to do whatever we want, and the heck with you, people would be a little bit
frightened,
and may decide not to use your product. But if you hide all of that, it's all the same thing. They just hide it in a lot of legalese, knowing that 99.9% of the people will not read it, and therefore they will agree to whatever you have. There was one company that put, you will sell your soul for a chocolate bar. You will, sell us your firstborn. You give us the right to read all your email. They just put ridiculous things in there, and people just click OK.
Well, like you said, though, and you made a good point, Ed, is just making it long, making it, page after page after page. People just don't want to take the time to go through all that fine print and read all that.
But if you want to, if you wish to participate in, the social things that we have today, you have to go.
Yes, they've got you.
Every corner, don't they?
Yep, they got you.
Right. And it's not just the social stuff. Windows has an end user license agreement. Everybody has an end user license agreement. Even the free software has an end user license agreement. Generally, it's do whatever you want, but it has one. And people don't bother to read any of them. I tend to read them, and there are a few times that I have said no thank you. Because I just didn't think that that I wanted to be involved in that in any way. And that means there are some programs I don't use because of that. And I always try to say, many programs give you the option to save the end user license agreement. And I used to do that all the time, but now you can find them all online. Mm-hmm. So that's not a big deal. Just type in Windows EULA end user license agreement or Linux EULA or whatever it happens to be. So I don't bother to save them anymore. But they're all out there, and they're all long legalese jargon. If you're having any trouble at all with insomnia, let me recommend reading an end-user license agreement.
And that'll put you to sleep for the night.
For the night and half the next morning. But they're out there, and legally they have to have them, and legally you have to agree to it. So the more difficult and obfuscated they make it, the more likely you are to just say, yeah, let me get to the software.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
It's the same problem we have downloads of bloatware. People complain, all of a sudden all these extra toolbars showed up on my browser and I didn't download them. I didn't agree to this. Yeah, actually you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because you clicked yes when you were installing some free piece of software, and at least one of those yeses said we'll install the Yahoo toolbar.
Pretty sad commentary, isn't it?
Well, it is what it is. People are impatient, and people just want to get to what they want. We've said this many times. Instant gratification is no longer fast enough, and so people have gotten click happy and just keep hitting next till they get what they want. And that includes not reading the end user license agreement. I know people who get annoyed that they have to scroll to the bottom before the OK button lights up.
Yeah. I'm guilty. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, right.
All right.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it's an issue that we all deal with, and
mm-hmm.
And I get it. I really do get it.
But then don't complain because you didn't take the time, and you're getting all these extra bars and all that on your machine, Windows and all that. They're there. Because you didn't take the time to slow down and see what you're agreeing to. Because some of them, if they're going to, some of them are pretty blatant. We're going to make this your default browser.
Right. We're going to make this. Well, the one that really gets me is there was one, I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, that said, you give us the right to use your unused computer cycles to mine bitcoins.
Yep.
What?
Mm-hmm.
If I were going to mine bitcoins, I would want to do it for myself, not for you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that music tells me you've wasted 2 entire hours of your life with this nonsense. Will you never learn? But we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray for not being here. He's listening, and that made him angry right now. And I want to thank everybody who called in. Well, we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back with a whole lot more of Sound Bites right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.